Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean.
Hi, this is Scott.
This is Pat.
In today's program, we've had several calls and ranging from a variety of topics. We've got someone who's inheriting an IRA and trying to figure out how to split it up.
We have a gentleman that wants to know whether he should buy life insurance and not have a election benefit for his wife's pension.
Oh, yeah, that's an... Yeah.
So someone trying to sell him a big, fat life insurance policy.
We got some other great calls, too. Stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit HansonMcLean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Thanks for joining us today as we talk about the world of finance, help try to make some sense of what's going on in the financial world, and help you prepare and make plans for retirement income. Regardless of what stage in life you are.
So. And maybe bringing a little bit of peace to your financial life.
Yeah, that might be it too. Hopefully.
Yes.
Unless you're part of the program and you realize you're way behind on your retirement savings, then it might create some additional anxiety for you.
Okay, so the goal of the question of the show is either to create peace or anxiety.
Depending. Oh, well, hopefully to cause, we just want you to be better prepared.
There we go. Yeah. Easy enough.
So, if you want to be part of the program, as you know, both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself. We come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. So, whether you're listening to us on a radio program or you're listening to us via podcast, we are glad you're with us. And if you want to be a caller and join us, by the way, this works not only if you're listening, you know, as we're broadcast through a radio program, but also if you're a podcast listener, you can give us a call and we'll schedule a time for have you be on the show.
Easy
peasy. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of the program. That's 1-888-2-HANSON, 888-242-6766, and that will get you on the show. And we're looking forward to taking your calls and answering your questions. And why don't we start right off with the phones today? In Northern California, we're talking with Gary. Gary, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, guys.
Hi,
How
Gary.
You doing?
We're great. Yeah.
Just a simple question on the new tax law passed end of last December, I believe. We receive our real estate property tax bill assessment for the fiscal year, July 1st through June 30th. And it's typically done in two installments, one due November 1st, delinquent December 30 or 10th, and then the second one in February. So I made both payments before the end of December.
Did your check clear?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the question is there any new or clear guidance from the IRS?
You know, it's interesting. Go ahead, Pat.
Not on that, but go, Scott.
Well, no,
because on 2018 is what people were trying to prepay, thinking they could prepay and take the deduction.
But I read somewhere someone was starting to try to see how they can disallow. So you were entitled to pay that in 2018. What you weren't able to do is to prepay anything for the next tax
2018
bill.
Because you hadn't actually you had not created a liability which was due. So therefore, you couldn't prepay at 2018 and take a deduction, but you most certainly did the right thing by
paying
2017, as did I.
So,
yes.
And I remember, if you remember back in December, there were some counties that said, hey, come pay in person because they were concerned about not cashing the check in time or something. But
and there was on TV, they were showing some lines in states back east that they're trying to pay before the end of December.
It's a strange world, isn't it?
Yeah,
I can't. So,
A of this 1040.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't. I wouldn't anticipate any guidance from the IRS that would be retroactive to something that for 2017.
It was only 2018 that was in question.
Yeah, and ours goes fiscal year through.
Yeah, because it would have been nice to bundle up, right? Well, I'm going to prepay my
but you hadn't 2018, accrued that liability
2019,
yet.
2020, pay them all in the future. On a bad
much
year.
Like I would have, but if you could have done that, I would have prepaid my interest for the next 20 years on my home loan, too, and taken the deduction. You got to draw a line somewhere.
Yeah,
you'll be fine there.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks, Gary. And it's interesting, Pat, this tax law, I mean, it'll impact most people. What they say, the estimate's going to be 90% of Americans will take a standard deduction now.
It'll make it easier for most Americans.
Yeah.
It will make it better for most, less taxes for most Americans.
And it will be interesting to see if there is any negative, what are the negative consequences for this? Some charities are concerned that some giving might be down because people, if 90% of Americans, it was roughly 70 some odd percent before who were taking a standard deduction or not filing.
Okay.
Right. So,
which is probably the same thing.
And so now, it'd be interesting to see if there's some middle class families that itemized before, don't itemize today, if that'll impact their giving to charities. If essentially they're getting the tax deduction, it's all wrapped
anyway.
Up. It's called the standard.
Yeah, they're getting it anyway. So there's no actually extra benefit of giving the money. There's no extra tax benefit.
Correct.
There's a karma benefit.
Karma.
You know what I did read is an
you'll wonder to see about even if it's and if you look at it at well, most nonprofits, the majority of the funding they receive is from individuals, but still the majority is from wealthy individuals, let's face it, right? For organizations. But they still need that base of the smaller donors. They need those dollars. A lot of organizations, and it'll be interesting to see if over the next couple of years
whether that's affected, that unintended consequence. Yeah. Well, you know, I read a great article this last week about the estate tax and that you're allowed to gift the money.
Yes, correct.
But the question is it repealed? Do you have to claw back that gift in 2025? If it gets repealed and they move it.
Well,
I
mean, it ends in 2025. Not that it gets repealed, it gets thrown back to what.
So no one knows whether you'll have to claw those dollars back if you've gifted them away into an irrevocable trust, whether the law requires you to claw them back. I don't know how you'd claw back.
Well, we haven't had a time yet for estate taxes where we've gone backwards. We've had other periods when the amount you can gift was different than the amount that you can pass away with. But I know of no time in
where it hasn't. They haven't moved the number up.
Yeah, it continues to go up. Although in 2000, wasn't it the year 2000 was the year where it was unlimited?
Well, that was just a gap in legislation where it was. It wasn't 2000,
it was a gift level was different then. Whatever it was, okay.
Anyway,
now we're getting off talking about stuff.
Well, that is some exciting radio.
But in planning, I mean, if you do have a larger estate or a family business or whatnot,
we're working with our clients right now.
There's not a lot of guidance on what's going to happen after 2025.
But you should be. But there could be a great opportunity to, I shouldn't say avoid estate taxes, but to avoid estate taxes.
Well, what's wrong with avoiding estate taxes?
We're not really avoiding them. You're just using the tax code so that you're not paying as much as you could if you didn't use the tax code.
I had a gentleman years ago. He was arguing, like, yeah, well, these wealthy people that do everything they can to save every dollar in taxes, all these little loopholes are going through. And I said, let me ask you a question. I said, you have a mortgage on your house? Yes. I said, do you list out all your interest you pay? Well, yes. And do you list out your property taxes you pay? I said, well, you're doing everything in your power. Why is that any
what
different?
What did he say?
He didn't really have an answer.
Well, he might have been the fat cat. Everything's relative.
Well, on a global basis, he certainly was. Yeah. So anyway,
everything is relative.
All right, we're getting off on tangents. 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number to join us, and would love to take your call. 1-888-2-HANSOM. It's funny. I was talking we're going to go back here to phones in a second, but I've had a friend of mine saying, "Oh, I could tell you guys didn't have any calls the other day on your show." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Well, yeah, you and Pat were like talking about whatever we're talking about," and I said, well, that doesn't mean we don't have callers. Just sometimes we just start
Yeah, we don't see a lot of each other.
We want to entertain it. Like, the goal is this. First, entertain each other.
That is the number one goal of the radio show.
Entertain myself, then entertain Pat, then entertain the listeners.
And that, in that particular order.
Yes. That's what seems to
work
well.
But we used to see a lot of each other, but you're a good friend of mine, but we don't see each other very much.
Socially, almost none.
Yeah.
And I think it's because we do enough during the work.
Yeah.
It's funny because Pat and I have been working together for 27 years.
And I've decided to keep my social sphere just the friends, my children's friends' parents.
Here we go.
That's what I've decided. Those are the only people I'm going to associate with are my children's friends' parents.
Okay, then. So we used to get invited to the McLean's house. And actually, Pat's a pretty good cook, but it's been
some time.
It's been probably 15 years.
Because our kids aren't friends.
They're not. My kids do hate your kids. No, I'm joking. Different schools. Anyway, we better get back to the calls then. 1-888-2-HANSEN. We're in Sacramento with David. David, you're with Hanson McLean.
How are you guys?
We're great. Thanks for joining us, David.
Yeah, you bet. The comment on the friends' parents, it's funny how that changes over the years. As your kids move out and go away, you tend to see those people less and less, and then you'll be left with no friends.
David, I still have some kids at home, and I'm almost there already.
Yeah.
Well, they've gotten to know you, that's why.
Exactly. So this is a timely question, given we're talking about getting older. I still work for a large employer that has a pension plan. I do not see myself starting to tap into that pension plan until absolutely necessary and when I get 100% of that benefit at 62. But I did get a letter in the mail from the company saying that now that I'm turning 55 this year, I can elect to take a pre-retirement 100% joint and survivor annuity, which basically would be an insurance policy I would take out on myself for my pension. Given if I was to die before I turn 62, my spouse would get 100% of my pension instead of the 50% she'd get if I did not elect the insurance.
So let me ask
policy.
You, so they're giving this opportunity, you're 55, that you're still working for the same employer, correct?
Yes.
Is it revocable?
Do not know the answer to that.
Probably not. But my question, did they freeze the pension at some point in time, or are you continuing to accrue additional benefits?
Oh, I continue to accrue. All this is saying is that if I was to die at 57, get hit by lightning on the golf course or something, at this point, if I do not elect this coverage, my wife would only get 50% of my pension benefit.
What is this?
Go ahead.
What impact? So if you take this at 62, at 55, you elect this, what impact does that have on your pension at your ultimate retirement
date? So does it lower it to 88% of what it normally would be?
What it is it's 0.5% per year that I have it in place. So if I was to take it at 55, and that's when you have to take it, you have to start it at 55, otherwise they do not offer it to you again. And if I wait until I'm 62 to start drawing from my pension, it would be 3.5% off of my pension payment per month.
Oh, you know something? I got to tell you something. This is highly unusual.
I know it is.
It's really, really, really unusual that they offered this to you while you were working.
At this stage in life.
Very, very unusual.
Because the people who are going to opt for it are the ones that have health issues.
So it can create a negative pull. So let's talk about you and your wife. Let's talk about your health and your longevity, because that's a big driver. And then you use the word life insurance, and does it make sense
to get some insurance for the next?
Wait, but the question is, when you go to, let's say you elected to take the joint and survivor right now, so that you had 100% paid out to her. When you go for a normal retirement, are you allowed to change that to any other election?
Yeah, actually, when I retire, at that point, I would then need to elect again. How I want to take that payment. And that's actually another question.
Wow.
We could take another segment here. I could take 100% to me that I would get an increased payment, or I could take a 75 to me, 25 to her, or I could take 50-50.
So it is 100% revocable at normal retirement age. So we're talking about the time you're, did you say, how old did you say you were, 55?
I'll be 55 this May.
Okay, so you're 55 now, and when do you plan on retiring?
Well, I'm hoping to retire at 60, but not start drawing pension until I'm 62.
All right, so 62, so we have 7 years. And what would 100% of your pension benefit be?
In the round, you want dollar figures?
Yeah, dollar figures per year, or 90%.
About per year, about $120,000.
All right, and so she would receive 90% of the 120, correct?
No, she'd receive not at retirement age, you mean?
Yeah, no, between, if something happened to you tomorrow, if you elected this and took the full survivor benefit, she would receive how much?
100%.
100%. So 120 a year. So we're talking about 800.
The difference between 50% or 100%. So we're talking about $60,000 a year.
Correct. Right? Correct. So we're talking about that. And then we're talking times 7 years, which is $420,000. And then we're talking about a taxable benefit. And the taxable benefit would be approximately... So 420, I'm quick doing some math because that makes for great radio.
Yeah. Well,
about $300,000 of life insurance policy for 7 years.
If this was priced based on market realities, which may or may not be, depending on how the pension was structured, but if it's based on market realities, what would tend to happen is those that had health issues or were concerned about that would opt in for those. And those that were really healthy, they'd say, you know what? I'm better off going and buying some life insurance in the open market or do nothing at all. So it would, by that pool alone, would push up the
cost. Because it would create an adverse selection.
If it was truly market-based pricing, which it may or may not be.
But you can replace
this. What
would
you do, Pat?
So I don't know. I'd cost this. I would cost this. I'd look at everything else in the situation. But what I know
I'd probably buy some term insurance.
I'd probably buy some $400,000 in term insurance. Because
for a short period of time.
For 7 years.
Right.
For seven years. Because what we know is that the benefit is not even doing a net present value calculation. If I did a net present value calculation, it's going to be about $400,000. Remember, life insurance proceeds come to you tax-free, and IRA or pension distributions are taxable. So you need about $300,000 in life insurance to replace that $60,000 that is lost.
But, okay. but it's actually 50% the rest of her life.
Oh,
yes,
that's a good point. Yeah.
So it is a net present value of those.
Yeah,
dollars.
It is. I don't know. I'd have to cost it.
My gut tells me, if you're in good health, that you'd be better off going and buying some term insurance.
Yeah, and what that amount would be hard to determine.
Well, and the other thing, I mean, if I died anyway, I also have other term insurance through work, and I have a whole life policy with life insurance. So
how much do you have there? How much do you have there?
I've got $1 million on term, and my whole life, I forget what the value of it is.
And how much do you have in your IRAs?
Almost $1 million.
And do you have any debt?
Significant.
You have significant debt.
Well, I have a house. I have children. I have college.
Children.
I have lots of.
You're in a high expense time. I get that.
I live in California. We're in a high.
How's your health?
No, my health is pretty good.
You know, it's interesting. This is a sizable pension, and because the size of it,
I would I'd actually pay it. I know what I would do. I would do the calculation and figure out what the value of the life insurance is. And assuming you and your spouse have good health.
You'd pay what?
I would elect the 100% payout to my spouse.
Is she the same age as you?
She is. She would tell you she's much younger, but she's 6 months younger than I am.
I probably would as well. Mainly, if this was, for most people, the pension isn't this large of their retirement income. It's a smaller portion, right? You know, if you're.
This is the bulk of it.
And it's a large one, too. So you could have a nice lifestyle by having if you take the survivor joint 100%, it's still a sizable check. And now if something happens to you or whenever you pass away, you can have full confidence that your spouse has plenty of income, not only for the rest of her life while she's healthy, but plenty of income if there's ever some long-term care needs.
I mean, I would do the math, but at the end of the day,
And it doesn't work. It doesn't really work well if you say, I'm going to buy enough life insurance to fund this and maintain my life insurance forever until the day you die, because the numbers, it just starts falling apart.
So I would take the 100% benefit to my spouse.
You'd make this election at age 55 or something.
And then I'd revisit it at age 62 when I took the final election. And my guess is if you were sitting in all things being equal and your health was both good, you would elect the 100% benefit to the spouse as well.
Yeah. So that leads to a second question, if you have time.
Sure. By the way. And you know, it's interesting. So you're talking about this. I'm sitting there thinking, this is a I was actually fascinated by this. I'm making the notes. And then I'm thinking, how many of our listeners are fascinated by this?
And I was thinking, how many times I've ever seen it?
It's pretty rare.
I can't recall ever seeing it in person. I've read about it. I've heard of it. I've never actually
seen
one. Someone
coming to you asking your opinion on it.
Yes, yeah. I've never seen one. So that's the first thing. Take the full survivor benefit to the spouse. Second question.
The second question is when I do retire at 62 or when I start to take my pension, I elect to do it. Some of my colleagues have opted to take 100% coverage so that their spouse is not covered if they were to die. And the extra money that they get, because there is it's a premium you get paid, yep, versus taking the 50-50, they've taken that and gone out and bought $1 million life insurance,
yep,
policy.
Never seen it work.
Never seen it work.
I have seen it not work.
So I picture here in my mind right now, David, is a woman and she's got to be a late 80s. Okay. I met her in 1991. Okay, long time ago. Her husband had opted for the 100% and had a life insurance policy. And they used to call it pension max. When interest rates were higher, insurance companies used this a lot to start selling people. And unfortunately, the guy, her husband passed away not that many years after. There was not nearly enough life insurance for her to make it work. So we'd been working with this woman since 1991, and it's one of those that whenever I see her name somewhere, it's like the income that's coming into her is not enough for her really to live well. And had he taken the pension options,
wouldn't have to worry. Yeah. I've seen it 3 times that didn't work.
The problem
never
is.
Never saw it work, though. I got to tell you that.
Part of the problem, when you take a reduction, let's say it's $10,000 a month is what your pension is. And if you want to take a survivor benefit, it's $9,000. So let's just make simple math. You say, well, why don't I just take that $1,000? Well, I'll just take the $10,000. I'll take that $1,000 a month and go buy life insurance. When you take a reduced pension instead, you're not being taxed on that difference. It's essentially you're paying for that insurance, which is kind of what you're doing, with pre-tax dollars. When you're buying a commercial policy in the marketplace, that $1,000, that extra $1,000 is getting taxed to you. So now you actually have less money to go out and fund for a premium. Plus, when you figure out, I don't know, what kind of withdrawal percentage you're going to use to determine how much capital
life
you're
insurance
need.
Proceeds come to you tax free, but the earnings don't come to you tax free; they come to you taxable. So, when you go through this calculation, what is the insurance?
Have you ever? First of all, I've met with many widows over the years. It's typically women. 9 out of 10 times, the guy goes before the woman. That's just reality. I can't think of one situation where I thought, oh man, you've got way more than more in life insurance than you need.
No. So I would, I've never, stay away from it. Tell your friends to stay away from it.
Insurance agents will make a good
case.
And
the reality is, what do you think the pension plan is actually doing internally with their own numbers?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
They're doing exactly that.
It's all actuary.
It's all actuarial driven. Life insurance is actuarial driven. Pensions are driven by the actuary.
And
table.
I would argue that the cost of that internal of the pension is much less than the cost of a commercial insurance company.
That 100%
and insurance companies, for about every dollar they take in premium, they pay out 50 cents in benefits. So about 50% of all insurance premiums, okay, what kind of insurance is, ends up going to all the
overhead
costs. And
does that help?
Yep, very much so.
All right, appreciate the call, David.
Yeah.
Hey, David, real quick.
Yeah.
What do you do for a living? I have some ideas in my head. What do you do for a living?
I'm in sales.
And you sell some technology of some sort?
Actually, medical.
Okay.
Got it.
Appreciate
that. Good for you and working for a company that has a traditional pension.
Like that.
You probably didn't think about that when you were young and went to go work there.
Fortunately, I started with them a little bit later, so I had some idea. But
okay.
I'm very, very fortunate to work for this company.
Yeah, good for you. Well, and they were good for right. I mean, you're part of the company, so you do make up the company. Yeah. So anyway, appreciate the call.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, thanks, bye-bye. David. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to hit back the phones. We'll talk to Linda and we'll talk to you. 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number to join our program. 1-888-242-6766. And real quick, as a reminder, our Hanson McLean website, we've got a fantastic learning library on some things like one of his answers to pre-retirees' 9 biggest worries. And you got right on our downloadable guide at HansonMcLean.com. So we encourage you to go visit that. Stick around for the second half of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We'll be right back.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are having us being part of your day. It's Pat and I have been doing this program for 20 some odd years, and
we're here every weekend, same time, same place.
Yeah, and glad you are part of us. And I think our podcast subscribers, there might be more people listening to our program via podcast now than do our terrestrial radio. And by the way, if you'd like to do that, we just go to HansonMcLean.com. You can sign up for it. And if you are, I was talking to my father the other day. I'd sent him a podcast on something, and he was asking, how do I do this? I don't think he'd actually listened to podcasts before, but he's got a smartphone and all that. And so
we have a video, a tutorial.
We do at HansonMcLean.com. It'll walk you right through, and you can learn not only how to subscribe to Hanson McLean's podcast, but any other podcast that you may or may not be interested in.
Oh, yeah. We have the two story, and there was a leak upstairs, and it kind of put a little...
We have the two story.
We have a two story house.
Okay.
We have a two story house, and there was a leak upstairs, and there was a little bulge in the ceiling. So I watched a bunch of YouTube videos, and did the repair myself.
You fixed the leak?
Well, I fixed the leak. That was easy. But
fixing the leak was easy?
Yeah, that was easy. But it was repairing the drywall was a little bit.
I've
more
lived
difficult.
In the same house 12 years. I don't know if there's a winter that we haven't had a leak.
Oh, the fixing the leak was pretty easy. All right. But
we'll see.
But without the YouTube videos of the tutorials, I would have never attempted it.
Thanks for sharing that. I'm just
kind
trying
of
to
a handyman.
Picture Pat. That's probably a good use of your time too. 1-888-2-HANS. Something you know so little about that you're on. But you know, here's the reality. Fixing the leak in your roof, if you got it wrong, not a big deal.
Right? Not a big deal.
You're going into retirement.
Big deal.
And, you know, we've got all these learning guides and stuff. We're trying to help educate people, to arm people. But, you know, if you don't get it right.
Well, actually, Scott, you and I can say that because we know what it's like to be a client of Hanson McLean. But the most important thing to do is to get it right. And if you're going to go it with an advisor, make sure you have the right advisor.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, we've seen enough people over the years not do it right, make mistakes they can't recover from.
And we've seen enough people that use the wrong advisor.
Yes. All right. 1-888-2-HANSON to be part of the program. 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. We're talking with Linda. Linda, thanks for your patience. Welcome to Hanson McLean.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is about an IRA. And my mother passed away about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And thank you. And so she had an IRA that will be split between my brother and myself. Approximate value is $271,000. And she had a heavy amount, 66% in stocks and 24% in mutual funds. So heavily invested in the stock market. I have a few questions. And I think the most urgent one that I have is that she was always telling me, within 60 days of my passing, you must get this IRA settled and split between the two of you. I've done a lot of reading, and I'm thinking that that applies if you're a spouse inheriting, but maybe not if you're a child, and I have a question about that.
Yeah, so the 60-day, there's a 60-day rule that, and some of this goes back years ago. It used to be years ago, if you left an employer, had a 401k or an IRA, and you wanted to put it somewhere new, you would take possession of that. You had 60 days to put it into a new retirement account. Almost everybody does things transfer directly these days, trustee to trustee transfer. So with that, there's not this same 60-day requirement. Essentially, with this, you do not have to make a decision within 60 days. You probably have until the end of the calendar year to make a decision.
Yeah, so there isn't an immediate. Your mom was right in terms of a 60-day rule, but it didn't apply to the situation that she was.
Matter of fact, you can defer
up to 5 years.
Yeah, but then you'd have to start taking distributions. It would not be
so
advisable.
So, how old was your mother when she passed away?
She was 90.
Okay. All right. So here's I'll walk you through the mechanics of what you want to do.
Okay.
So you and your brother want to go to, and you don't have to use the same institution. You want to go and open up a beneficiary IRA someplace.
Hopefully, where's the mom's IRA now?
Wells Fargo Advisors.
Okay, they should be able to just take that account and split them into two accounts. One with Linda being listed as beneficiary of mom's IRA, and the other is Linda's brother. Beneficiary of mom's IRA.
And those are the dollars, and you could split them right up the middle, or you could go 100% to cash and then have them put cash into these IRAs, but they'll split them there. You don't need to leave that IRA at Wells Fargo. You can transfer it wherever you want after that, or you can choose to leave it there. Once you get the dollars over there, you're required to start taking an annual distribution in the first year. And that way you can keep the distributions low and they will be paid out over your normal life expectancy. If you miss that first year's distribution, then the whole thing needs to be paid out over 5 years.
Okay.
So you want a distribution before the end of the year.
So you want to do a distribution before the end of this year, and just call the broker and say, split it up. And then you're going to name a beneficiary on your IRA, and your brother's going to name a beneficiary on his IRA, and then you can decide whether to keep it there or not.
Are you 100% confident that you and your brother are the beneficiaries on this?
Yes.
Okay. Then all you need to do is provide a death certificate to the company, and what the instruction is, you want to set these up in beneficiary IRAs. Say, I don't want these paid out. I want to set up in a beneficiary IRA.
And it needs to be a trust-to-trust transfer, which it will be.
Okay.
And it's
easy.
So
it's not called an inherited, because I've read about inherited IRA. Or is that the same thing?
It's the same thing. Most financial institutions refer to it as a beneficiary IRA.
Oh, okay.
But an inherited IRA means
the same thing.
Yes, it's the same thing. You can't, it has to be, your mother's name has to remain on the IRA, though.
That's what I was wondering. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So if you were a spouse, it would be, it isn't the same rules, but because you were non-spousal IRA beneficiary, then your mother's name would remain on the IRA.
Okay. Okay. Now, is it also true, my understanding is you can inherit it as a beneficiary IRA, which makes sense. Take the whole thing, which does not make sense, distribution. Or is there an option that you can disclaim for the next generation? That in other words, you disclaim it and it passes on then to my daughter, for example.
Yeah. Well, you could disclaim part of the estate.
But it would end up going to your brother.
But it would go to your brother. The IRA.
It goes next in line for mom's beneficiaries. Mom's deceased, you know. Who would be in mom's lineage?
Yeah, you can't disclaim it to your own child, and I don't know why you would want to either.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
All righty.
Okay. I misunderstood, I think, about the whole.
Yeah, it's not that complicated. It's not that complicated. And the Wells Fargo, your broker over there should be actually walking you through this. Have you had contact with them?
I have. They they kind of understand it. I was wondering, does it have to be stepped up values or not?
No, it doesn't have anything to do with stepped up value.
No.
Okay. Completely different. Completely different.
Oh.
If you were a client of our firm, you would actually, we would just say, come on in and we will do the paperwork and explain it to you.
Yeah.
That's it.
I'm
we wouldn't tell you to go do any research because what you're actually doing is you're bringing back research that has nothing to do with what your situation is. Nothing at all, Linda. And you're going to know a lot of stuff about something that you don't need to know about because it will never apply again. So this stepped up basis doesn't apply to
IRAs. You.
You're a client of our firm. We just say, okay, either you want to come in or do this. We'd have someone on the phone. If you didn't want to come in the office, we'd tell you exactly how it was going to work. And it's not that big of a deal. It's easy.
Okay.
It is easy. You're making it harder than it needs to be. They're making it harder than it needs to be.
I think it's because everyone's telling me something different.
So just remember a couple things. Number one, there's no rush here.
Okay.
Just need to get it done by the end of the year.
Your mom passed away 2 weeks ago. I know there's a lot you've been dealing with, right? And all the emotions that are going on. Everything's cloudy right now. And you probably feel like like you're carrying a load of bricks on you because it's just, it's hard when you lose a loved one like this. It's been 2 weeks. So there's no rush. So if you want to say, you know what, I'm going to ignore this whole thing for a few more weeks, fine.
Yeah.
If that helps you, then ignore it for a few weeks. You've got plenty of time.
Okay. I have one more question then.
Fire away.
My mother's accountant told me that for the taxes for 2018, that we, meaning my brother and I, would have to take the RMD based on my mother's age because she obviously will not be taking an RMD for 2018.
That's correct.
So then after that, I assume it would be based on our individual life expectancies and the year-end value of the account after that, right?
Correct. That is correct.
Okay, so that has to be divided out this year, the RMD.
Well, that's an easy calculation.
No, most likely we'll do the redistribution and then split the IRA.
Okay. There was one more question I had, but I just can't think of it right now, but that's okay. It was something about the RMDs. That's all right.
No, so the RMDs, once they're going to do the distribution for your mother's RMDs to their
state. Required minimum distributions.
Her state's going to file a final tax return. You're going to roll these things over into your beneficiary IRAs, and then you're going to do a required minimum distribution based on your life expectancy. If you don't do that in the first year, then then the whole thing needs to be distributed within 5 years.
Yeah, so if you failed to do mom's distribution this year, then within 5 years it needs to be liquidated and taxable.
So it's all new to you, but the IRA trustees do it on a daily basis. So, and before we start, we go back to the calls. We want to talk about a workshop, upcoming workshop. It's a live workshop that we have on Social Security. So we did this at the end of last year, and it was our most attended event.
Surprisingly so, actually.
We had to shut off, I think we did like, I don't know, we closed like 3/4 of them to people because we just couldn't get more people into the workshops.
We had over 4,000 people sign up for those events last year.
It was, so this is Social Security, a workshop, and we talk about how to take Social Security benefits. What strategies should you be looking at?
This is really designed, so if you've been a hard saver over the years, you are maybe late 50s, approaching 60s, trying to figure out how do we figure out our Social Security? Do we look at taking it at age 62? Do we wait until our full retirement age at 66 or 66 and some months? Do we wait until age 70? What about spousal benefits? That's what this workshop covers. And then how do you integrate, how do you think about these in conjunction with your other assets or pensions you might have?
Yeah. Do you defer and allow your assets to grow? Or take from your assets, or do you start now and allow your assets to grow? We go through all these different scenarios to help you understand your situation. So these are week of March the 12th. We're in the Sacramento area. We have a workshops in Roseville, Sacramento, Auburn, and Rancho Cordova. That's the week of March the 12th. In the week of March the 19th, we have them in the Denver area in both Cherry Creek, Highland Hills, and Broomfield. And then also on the week of the 19th, we have them in the San Francisco Bay Area in Petaluma, Danville, Concord, and San Mateo. And so if you want more information, go to HansenMcLean.com to register. And like I said, these things, the Social Security workshops, we do them on different topics throughout the year. But these ones filled up fast last year.
Yeah, so
And I know why. Because there is no more exciting topic than Social Security.
That's right. All right. Let's go to Northern California, and we're going to talk with Jim. Jim, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for joining us, Jim.
Hey, I'd like to start off with a little story. I'm 59 right now. And I was planning on rolling my traditional Roth in traditional IRA into Roth IRAs as years go along. So I did that last year, and
a portion. You converted a portion of your IRA to a Roth.
Right. That was my attempt to pay taxes on it now and avoid bigger taxes when I get Social Security started and all that other stuff. So anyway, I contacted Charles Schwab, had them roll over $30,000 and $10,000 to pay into for taxes, right?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
And I got two 1099s from them. Okay. And the only reason I can think of they did that is because I potentially got penalized for an early withdrawal on that $10,000.
How old? You said you were 59. 59 and what?
And not quite a half. I'll be 59 and a half in April.
Oh, when did you do this?
In January, for the new tax year.
You did it in January?
First year. Yeah, January 2018.
Well, you shouldn't have received a 1099 on it already if it took place in 18.
I did receive two of them. And like I said, one was for $30,000, one was for $10,000.
But here's our confusion. If the transaction took place this last January, 2018, you wouldn't receive a 1099 until the calendar year is completed. You would receive that at the beginning of 2019, unless you did a conversion in 2017.
Did you do the same thing in 2017? Oh.
No, that was my first attempt at this rollover plan. So, it might have been in the end of 2017.
Okay, well, that matters.
Yeah, you're probably right.
This matters. This matters a lot. So okay. you weren't eligible for a distribution without taxes and a 10% federal penalty and 2.5% state penalty because you were under the age of 59 and a half. On the date you did it.
Well, when I brought these two 1099s, my tax lady, we just looked at each other like, how come I have two of these? And after, figuring it out, that's why.
Mm-hmm. But it all may not be lost.
Okay.
When did you do it?
Like I said, it must have been the end of 2017, December of 2017.
Yes, he's past the 60-day window.
Yep. Yep. You owe the penalty.
Let me ask you, is there dollars sitting around somewhere that you could actually pay the taxes with?
Yeah, and that leads me to my question. In the future, I'm going to probably bite on this one, but in future, what is the best way to roll money from a traditional to a Roth and pay the taxes on it? Because I'd just as soon pay the taxes out of the traditional than take money out of my, liquid money.
Do you make all these
59 and a half?
Yeah. Jim?
Ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
You had mentioned you keep these dollars at Schwab. I assume you do not have a financial advisor on this.
Not necessarily, no.
You don't? You don't have one?
No.
Okay. You actually need...
You would better... this strategy may or may not be the right strategy.
You know it's not the right strategy, Scott. You would never take the dollars out of the IRA to pay the taxes
on
it.
Not if you have the dollars, because otherwise it's like giving unlimited Roth contribution.
Yeah, correct. So Jim...
That's my question, because I can take money out of the savings to pay the taxes in the future.
Yeah. Yes.
Absolutely. It's basically taking money and...
Yes.
Do you plan on being in California until your dying day?
Yes, I assume so, yes.
Okay.
So, yes, you would take the money outside of that. And remember, so when you did this, I assume that you did some tax planning and determined that the $40,000 was the amount to take before it ran you into the next highest marginal tax rate. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Okay. Right. Well, so that was right, right? But
right.
You could have converted the 40 and then taken the money out of either a brokerage account or savings and paid the tax on it, and that's the way you would want to do it.
Yeah, because then all that you're taking money, it's like taking money out of savings and putting it in a place where it's going to grow tax deferred and then tax free if you leave it there at least 5 years.
Yeah, so. It actually makes your Roth strategy even better.
So that's leads me to the question. It's better to take money out of savings and pay the tax.
Absolutely. And I would 100%. Actually, I question if it makes, if you don't have the money to pay the taxes, whether the conversions even make sense. And
actually, it's a push. It makes no difference whatsoever if you're paying it with the IRA. You went through this exercise for almost nothing, for no benefit.
Right. Well, I learned a little lesson here.
Educations are never cheap. And unfortunately,
and really good educations are super expensive.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Jim. And I mean, having to pay a tax, a 10% federal and 2.5% state penalty on...
Yes, $1,250.
I think early in the program I talked about the... You know, it's one thing if you mentioned fixing the leak on your house and looking at a YouTube video, and if you didn't get it right, whatever, right? You have to call the handyman over to fix it.
Yeah,
thousands of dollars in additional taxes.
Yes, yeah, I'm not doing engineering work on my house. I'm not digging into the foundation, right?
Yeah, you know, it says it's a load bearing wall. I'm not thinking so. Let's open this room up.
Actually, I'll tell you, I had a contractor once that said to me, I don't think it's a load-bearing wall. And I said, do you know? He said, well, I don't think so. I said, that's not good enough for me.
You need to leave now. I think it might be. All right. 1-888-2-HANSEN to join Hanson McLean. We're talking with Nancy. Nancy, you're with Hanson McLean.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Hi, Nancy.
I watch you guys, or I listen to you guys every Saturday.
Oh, thank you.
Without fail.
Oh, thank you.
Well, my husband and I are having a disagreement, so I thought maybe I'd ask your opinion on something.
He's wrong.
Oh, thank you.
As usual.
He wants to start withdrawing money from our IRA. We have like $750,000 combined in it. I'm 63 and he's 64. We're both retired, and our income right now is like $50,000 a year, so we're not paying very much in taxes. And that's his concept is, okay, well, it's low, we might as well start withdrawing. But when we're in our 70s and we have to withdraw, our income's not going to be that much higher, you know, with 2% cost of living increases. He has Social Security and I have CalPERS. Now, my issue is if something happens to him and he passes away, because of the windfall tax elimination, I'm only going to get like maybe $300 or $400 of his Social Security a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So my income's going to drop way down. And so that's why I think we should wait.
Let me ask you one question. What do you have as far as savings outside of your IRA?
About $40,000. But 40, our house is all paid off.
Okay.
Yeah, our house is totally paid off.
So why does he want to take these distributions? Does he want to spend them, or does he want to save them?
He just thinks that we're going to be paying a lot more in taxes on it if we wait. And I say it's going to be a wash. It's not going to make that much of a difference.
I agree with you on that.
You are right. And I would make every argument in the world for your position over his.
I would too.
Okay,
if you want to do anything because you're in a low tax bracket, you can convert a portion to a Roth each year, and
that's why
we asked how much you have in additional savings, and you don't have all
only 40.
Yeah,
don't have that much.
Yeah, because your house is paid off and everything else. If you had a bunch of money, then I'd say this would make a lot of sense. Do you plan on staying in California forever?
Yeah, our family's here.
Yeah.
I could do the math. We could do the math and see if a Roth conversion makes sense. Are you of the same ages?
Yes, he's only a year older than I am.
Okay.
Here's what I would recommend. Tell him right now, let's don't do anything. But later in the year, come fall when the dust settles in some of the new tax law, just do a little what-if scenario. Do you do your own taxes or do you?
TurboTax, yeah.
Okay. Then when TurboTax comes out with their 2018 tax program, just say, what happens if we put $10,000 into a Roth? How would this impact our taxes?
But what you don't know, Scott, what you don't know is his life. We're going to assume he has a normal life expectancy and that you're going.
Well, I'm talking about putting into a Roth.
Understand.
Instead of spending it.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to spend it. If you pull the money out and spend it, that'd be a terrible idea. But you could.
Unless you needed the money, the $50,000 of income. You could make an argument why a small distribution from this would help if they needed the money.
Yeah.
But if you don't need the money.
Yeah.
They don't.
Yeah.
So far, no.
But the windfall elimination provision actually is the thing that scares me on the back end of Nancy's.
Yes.
If he was to predecease Nancy. So you could, I agree with Scott, you do a little what if on the taxes to determine whether a Roth conversion makes sense
or not. Which would satisfy he's concerned about required minimum distributions at 70.5 and then 75 and 80. You're not so much. But if you converted some to a Roth, that would reduce that, which would satisfy his concern.
And allow the taxes, the dollars to grow tax.
And satisfy your concern about him passing away and you needing the dollars because the dollars aren't being spent.
Yeah.
So that's the one I would look at. I agree with Scott.
So, okay. So would I take it out of his IRA?
Oh, of course. Use his.
Yeah. But it doesn't
touch your money.
It doesn't really matter.
Okay. Kidding.
It doesn't really matter. But you would take it out of the older of the two.
Doesn't matter.
You would take it out of the older.
Okay.
The older of the two. Whoever's oldest is where you'd start. And always spend his money first.
Yeah, that's just a rule.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
All right, appreciate the call.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Colin.
Bye-bye.
And that's sometimes, it's funny. As we get into retirement, it gets much more complicated, doesn't it? Here she's talking about the windfall elimination provision on Social Security.
I thought that was pretty sharp that she actually, narrowed in on that so quickly.
Yeah. I mean, one of the reasons at Hanson McLean why we have specialized in retirement transition and helping people figuring these things out is because, it's often the most complex portion, financially complex period of one's life. And you don't have a chance to do it over.
Yeah. There's a difference between the accumulation phase, which is save, save, save. Most people get into the nitty gritty. Okay, is there enough and how is it going to come to me?
That's why we see a lot of people come visit us for the first time, in the latter part of their 50s, trying to make sure they step up right. Anyway, we're out of time. It's certainly been our pleasure being with you today. Learn more by going to HansonMcLean.com. We'll see you next weekend. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.